Sandbox Radio Live presents for your listening pleasure, Corwin by Corwin, a tribute to Norman Corwin, America's poet laureate of the radio and citizen of the world.
Hello, friends. This is Norman Corwin, speaking to you from beyond the grave. No, you heard me right. I am thoroughly and unabashedly deceased. In fact, I died just a few short months ago on October the 18th, 2011, at the tender age of 101. As to how I am able to speak to you now, well, you'll have to ask the compilers of this audio salute, who felt it advantageous to eulogize my life and work by stealing a conceit of one of my most popular radio dramas from World War II, a program that first aired on April 14th, 1944.
He was a famous trumpet man from out Chicago way. He had a boogie style that no one else could play. He was a top man at his craft. But then his number came up and he was gone with the draft. He's in the army now, a blowing reveille. He's the boogie-woogie bugle boy at Company B.
It was called Untitled, the story of an everyman, a regular GI, just one of thousands of little guys who grew into manhood during the long spiral downward into war. What you'll be hearing next is from the opening of that broadcast.
With reference to Hank Peters, he is dead. That much is certain. The fact of his death is common knowledge to himself and to the files of the War Department in Washington, D.C. It has been duly reported in his hometown newspaper and has been taken into consideration by his relatives and friends. Perhaps you knew Hank Peters. Perhaps if you didn't know him, you saw him somewhere and didn't know it was he. It's quite possible. Well, anyway, he's dead now. A couple of the boys sorted out his belongings and put him in a canvas bag and sent them home. There wasn't much to send.
Wristwatch?
Check.
Shaving kit?
Check.
Wallet?
Check.
14 American dollars?
14 bucks.
62 lira.
What'll his family do with lira?
Never mind. Put it down there. Portable radio?
Check.
Deck of cards?
Check.
Pack of letters?
Check.
For snapshots?
Let me see.
Come on. Marksman's medal?
Right.
That's all.
Next.
These things were sent home in a neat package. But what could not be sent home were items unassorted and unrelated that died within his head when he was hit. Telephone numbers, the taste of good hot grub on a cold rainy day, the shimmer and float of summer, and the bright bare legs of a woman. Oh, and a great many corny things, and a few others, including the antique smell of books in a public library, the pinch of his favorite pipe after 2 hours smoking, and the moon going down over the shoulder of his girl Marion as they sat on the porch into the hours of the forming of the dew. These items, of course, cannot be reconstructed as he felt them, and neither can Hank Peters be reconstructed, at least in the form by which you may have possibly known him.
And the broadcast goes on. We meet the medical officer that signed Hank's death certificate, his mother and teachers, his minister, his girl Marion, the GI that was by his side when he died, even the Nazi soldier that killed him, until finally we hear from Hank himself in the closing minutes of the broadcast, who turns out to be the voice we've been hearing all along.
I was Hank Peters. I assure you I hated to go. It is not easy to leave a woman crying at a train gate. It is not easy to leave a mother standing at a window, to walk away and not look back. I am dead of the mistakes of old men, and I lie fermenting in the wisdom of the earth. I am very dead, but not deader than the British who struck at Alamein, the Reds who crossed the Dnieper going west. I am silenced, but no more silent than the partisans of Yugoslavia who fought tanks with their bare hands and a bottle of benzene. I am buried, but no deeper than the children of Chongqing. I know how there will be jubilation at the end and how the proclamations will be sent out on the waiting air. They will gather in committee, pose for pictures, sign the papers. But let me tell you, from the acres of now undisputed ground, I will be listening. I will be tuned to the clauses in the contract where the word democracy appears, and how the freedoms are inflected to a Negro's ear. I shall listen for a phrase obliging little people of the earth, for partisans and Jews and Puerto Ricans, Chinese farmers, miners of tin ore beneath Bolivia. I shall listen how the words go easy into Russian and the idioms translated to the tongue of Spain. I shall wait, and I shall wait in a long and long suspense for the password that the peace is setting solidly. On that day, please to let my mother know why it had to happen to her boy.
You could say this isn't trivial stuff. I've never been enamored with piffle, as some are today. I was a kid in World War I, and I lived in a tenement house, and there was a woman, a family, that lived on the floor below my family's, which had a young son in the war. He was on a submarine chaser, which was torpedoed, and all hands lost. I remember, to this day, going up the stairs and hearing the sobs of his mother through the door. How can you forget that? All these years later, it haunts me.
Folks, the best way to describe Norman Corwin is he was the greatest director, the greatest writer, and the greatest producer in the history of radio. There was nobody like him.
Ray Bradbury, is that you?
Indeed it is.
Good God, they've dug you up too?
And don't forget me, man. Robert Altman here. And I got a few choice nuggets on this Corwin fella myself.
Look, Bob, I got this covered. Go back to bed.
Anything I know about drama today comes more from Norman Corwin than anybody.
Oh, holy Toledo, what the heck is going on?
Look, Norman, it's time these people understood your place in the American dramatic canon. Why, folks, in the 1940s, this man was about as famous as Franklin Delano Roosevelt. He beat down the doors of CBS Radio and worked right beside the likes of Edward R. Murrow, John Houseman, and Orson Welles.
He had a slew of successful shows where he wrote, cast, rehearsed, and directed a new original play every single week.
Oh, let's hear a little of that rhymed fantasy you wrote.
Which one? The plot to overthrow Christmas?
Yeah.
Nah. The one where Groucho Marx played the judge.
The Undecided Molecule.
Ah, sure, that's the ticket.
When did this one air?
July 17th, 1945.
Hear ye, hear ye. The Court of Arbitrations and Adjudications of Physiochemical Relations, Department of the Interior of the Atom, Criminal Sitting, Division of Investigation, Charge, Countercharge, Accusation, and Confession is now in session. The court will rise and face the justice who will adjust this case. See that your concentration centers on his honor, the justice, just as he enters, which he is doing even now. Everybody bow, everybody bow.
Ahem to it. Contrary notwithstanding, you may sit. Clank, read the charge.
May it please the court at all, to wit?
It pleases the court. Get on with it. Whose versus whom?
The cosmos and all the spheres, systems, clusters, galaxies, orbits, planets, satellites, together with all species of animals, vegetables, and minerals appertaining thereto, of all conditions of age, social standing, and sex, versus the anonymous molecule hereinafter referred to as X.
What's the charge against said molecule?
Unwilling to be named, rebelling when defined, declining to be blamed, objecting when assigned, protesting when selected, resisting an attack, refusing to be directed, and talking back.
Most serious, most dangerous, so strange it's almost strangerous. Insidious, precarious, a shade below nefarious. The possibilities in sight are frightful, meaning full of fright. And rueful, meaning full of rue. And gruesome, meaning rather grue.
Providing, Your Honor, the charges are true.
Why, yes, they must be proven true.
Which is something we have yet to do.
Quite right, but who's asking you? Now, is the prosecutor here?
Present.
Well then, appear.
May it please the court, this case involves a very small matter. By this I don't mean mere trivia or idle chatter, but a particle of matter best described as little.
Smaller than a jot?
Even smaller than a tittle.
Are you referring to molecule X?
Yes.
Then why don't you say so?
I will if I may so. The point, Your Honor, is that should X be acquitted here, catastrophe will follow, since it must be then admitted here. That all controls of elements have given way to anarchy, and every substance will perforce be jittery and panicky. Thus, when we wish a molecule to join up with some others to make a cup, or lemon drop, or the Karamazov brothers, to be a fog, or catalog, or lawn to be idyllic on, a beagle, or a bagel, or a mountain made of silicon, they may refrain, they may desist. And if enough of them should do so, there'll never be another tenor singer like Caruso. No dog to bark, no lark to hark, no grand old man like Talleyrand, no bee will be. You'll see no sea, no ostrich fan for Sally Rand.
It's staggering. It's awesome, the damage X could wreak. By simply playing possum, it makes me rather weak. Now, who's here for the defense?
I am, Your Honor.
Well, commence.
All right. Where in the universal law books can you find it's criminal for anything to be of open mind?
What? Young man, are you a red? Have you been to the crimson bread?
Neither to crimson nor to purple.
Well, no whippersnapping twerple challenge me. What do you take me for?
A most distinguished expert on the law.
First sensible thing you've said all day. Where were we in this trial, by the way?
On the right of X to have an open mind. Now, surely justice is not yet so blind as to be unfavorably disposed to...
Toward openness of mind? My mind is closed.
Dig it. Toward openness of mind, my mind is closed. Man, I love that.
Well, Corwin, that was refreshing.
Well, I'm glad you both approve.
Now, CBS sent you to England during the early 40s, and you did an entire series on your observations of that war-torn country under the title...
An American in England.
Well, I think these folks deserve a sampler. Go ahead.
What? You want me to recite it?
Why not? What else is on your calendar? You're deceased, remember?
Well... Normally, I'd get an actor for this, but, well, what follows comes from London by Clipper, which aired July 27th, 1942. The train is crowded. It's a warm Sunday, and people are apparently returning to London from outings in the country. You look at their faces. Good, average, unspectacular, kindly people. No signs of malnutrition in this batch. A little shabby, perhaps. Not a new hat or suit or dress in the lot. For a long while, you ride in silence. And then you look up, look casually out of the window, and there, right in front of your eyes, are the first bomb ruins you have ever seen. It's an ordinary suburban house, such as you'd find in Chevy Chase, Oak Park, Glendale, any of 10,000 towns in the States. But the roof of this one is burnt away, and the insides blasted out. And now you're passing a church, a little church like the one in Winthrop, Massachusetts, or in Kent, Ohio, or Pleasantville, Mississippi. Only this one is just four hollow walls. It's different from the pictures in the roto, somehow, different from the newsreels. It's the difference between seeing an actress on the screen and seeing her in person. This is the brick and mortar. This is the flesh and blood. And it makes you mad. Mad enough to forget your fatigue. Well, that enough for you two?
It'll do.
How about we close out with a bit of your masterpiece on a note of triumph?
Whoa, Ray. What about all the work he developed after the war? His television and film scripts, for instance, and the books?
Look, they gave us a paltry 2,600 words for this entire commemoration.
He was inducted in the Radio Hall of Fame, for Christ's sake.
Fellas.
I'll be seeing you in all the old
On a Note of Triumph aired the day of the Allied victory in Europe and was heard by millions of people around the world, Bob.
Okay, touche. But what part? That play had stories of soldiers, war observations, live music.
Well, maybe just a bit of the closing prayer.
The closing prayer? I like it.
Mm-hmm.
Lord God of test tube and blueprint, who jointed molecules of dust and shook them till their name was Adam, who taught worms and stars how they could live together, appear now among the parliaments of conquerors and give instruction to their schemes. Measure out new liberties, so none shall suffer for his father's color or the credo of his choice. Post proofs that brotherhood is not so wild a dream as those who profit by postponing it pretend. Sit at the treaty table and convoy the hopes of little peoples through expected straits, and press into the final seal a sign that peace will come for longer than posterities can see ahead, that man unto his fellow man shall be a friend forever.
Corwin, you do know I wrote the Martian Chronicles for you.
I heard the rumor.
Looks like Ray and I are shuffling up this mortal coil once more. You joining us?
In a minute.
Don't be long.
To all of you among the living, I'd suggest you get on with the work of the 21st century. It won't be easy, because nothing is easy. But I want you to know that I have no apology to make for the affirmative tone of these programs. I am convinced that ultimately we will get where we want to go. It will be grim en route. But I think there is nothing to be said for cynicism and despair, and everything to be said for getting out and working towards a better world.
What you have just heard was a tribute to the late Norman Corwin. For the peace of mind of our listening audience, please note that all speakers who were brought to life for the purposes of this broadcast have been called back to the great beyond. This salute was created by Elizabeth Heffron, using quotes by and about Norman Corwin and excerpts from his work. To find out more about the bards of radio's golden era, go to normancorwin.com. Thank you.
It's really been swell. It's really been great just to be with you on a sandbox date. Oh, say it ain't true. Oh, say it ain't so. Toys and turn out the light. We'll see you soon.
Epstein and West of Lennon for hosting us tonight. Tonight, the Sandbox Radio Blairs were...
Eric Ray Anderson.
Rick Deskin.
Kai Gottberg.
Sarah Harlett. Tracy Hyland.
Nick Kuhlman.
Charles Leggett.
Todd Moore.
Peter Dylan O'Connor.
Larry Paulson.
Annette Tatongi.
Catherine Van Meter.
With special guest, Heather Curtis Mullen. And the Sandbox Radio Orchestra, Dan Tierney. And I'm Leslie Law. So Catherine and Annette are going to bring out some lyric cards because this is the time of the night when you sing along with us. I think you know the tune. All right, ready?
Listening to Sandbox Radio. This episode, To Hell with Love, was recorded on January 23, 2012, at West of Lennon in Seattle, Washington. It was engineered by Christopher Stewart and mixed by Dave Pascal. Our stage manager was Colleen Nielsen. For information about the Sandbox Artist Collective and to access our podcast archive, visit our website, www.thesandboxac.org.